been in this house before. Yeah, we drank too much wine, cutting chords and writing rhymes. We showed each other how to shine.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of Standing Outside the Fire. My name is Matt, and first off, I'd like to thank my friend Emily Shirley for allowing me to sample some of her music that was Starstruck off her album Duotone from 2015. And her music is available on most of the online music sites. That may sound like a shameless plug, however, it's my podcast and I can do whatever I want to, so there you have it. Thanks, Emily. I would also like to thank you all. Got some good responses from episode 2 again, and some difficult things, but some good messages and good response. So I appreciate it. Helps me refine and make this podcast better for all of us. So I do realize that the last 2 episodes have been a sort of a Debbie Downer scenario, and I don't anticipate that being sort of my MO, but as I said earlier on, this does become very raw and real for me, and that's part of my process. So I understand that that is not appealing to everybody, but I don't sell commercials. I'm not in it for the money, and nobody's pulling the strings as of yet. So I really want this to be about my experiences and how it might impact the rest of us, and maybe how we can all collectively make this whole world a little bit better for us and, you know, our kids and our friends and family and so forth. So speaking of kids, I think this is probably where a good place to start for today's episode. Last night, my wife and I went out to dinner with a few friends of ours. In fact, the young man of the couple was a kid that we picked up on our fire department to go to a number of fires a few years ago, and we were short on the engine crew, and so we searched around and found a young man who had never been on fires before, or at least not large wildland fires, and totally spoiled him. Absolutely spoiled him. We were on a running and gunning fire from the get-go. We checked in and drove down to try and meet up with the incident commander, and we were immediately put into suppression mode, picking up spot fires that were across the ridge from a pretty significant raging crown fire, and he was wide-eyed, trying to take it all in. And of course, later on, as many of you know who work in the service, later on he found out that that was not at all what we normally do, which is mopping up and digging in the dirt and getting dirty and being bored and trying to keep ourselves entertained without hurting ourselves. And so we definitely spoiled him. But anyway, so we went out to dinner last night, and my wife and I met his fiance for the first time, and she was visiting. She's in school elsewhere. And the one thing that my wife and I realized after we were done with dinner and were driving home was that this young man and his fiance were the same age. In fact, they were younger than our oldest son. It wasn't lost on me that I had become, by some respects, a mentor to him. And while his father is very knowledgeable and experienced in fire, you know, when you go spend a week or two or three with somebody and you eat, breathe, sleep, live, and everything else alongside them, there's a bond that's created. And those bonds are shown in you know, hotshot crews and jumpers and any fire crew anywhere. And you walk into a firehouse and it's the same way. You might not like these people, but you have to trust them with your lives. And so you better find some common ground, because there's no room in a firehouse or on a fire crew for animosity or hate or anger. And I'm not saying that it doesn't happen. It absolutely does. But it's a whole different ballgame. It's not like going into the office, clocking in, saying hi to your coworkers, and sharing your weekend. It's so much more than that. I know that when push comes to shove, you might very well be the guy or the gal that's going to be dragging my ass out of the fire because I had an equipment malfunction, or the roof collapsed on me, or God forbid I had a medical issue or something like that. You know, that lurks in the back of our minds all the time. And that's something that the average citizen, I don't think, understands.
You roll out from under the covers and you stand, one foot before the other, feel your lungs expand.
So let's talk a little bit about the average citizen and what the expectations are of firefighters, police officers, EMS, and dispatchers. And I can provide three of those four perspectives, having done those before. I've never been in law enforcement. I don't like donuts that much, so I never really could pass those tests. I couldn't tell the difference between a powdered sugar and, you know, then you get the cream fillings and the fruit fillings, and I could never discern which was which. So that's where I always failed on the law enforcement tests. Actually, I kid, I would never test to be a law enforcement officer, mainly because there's no reason why I should be interacting with people at that level. Those of you who know me know that my people skills, while they can be very good, I don't deal with idiots very well. Unfortunately, that's what law enforcement officers deal with 90% of the time. In any case, the public has unreasonable expectations of its first responders. And I say that because, for instance, you go into a grocery store and you see these articles all the time, at least we do in the fields, and invariably somebody throws out the, you know, my taxes pay your salary. Why are you at the grocery store shopping? Why don't you just bring your food to the firehouse? For police officers, they may be sitting grabbing a cup of coffee at a local Stop and Rob. And yes, they're sitting outside their patrol car. And then there's the perspective from dispatch, where people are calling in and asking how to change the channel on their TV on the 911 line. Or maybe they ask how to get their garage door opener to work. Or they call and ask when the interstate is going to be open because of bad weather. Or all sorts of insane things, calling to order a pizza. And these sound funny, but you guys, they're not. This is what happens every single day in dispatch centers, in grocery stores, and there's this unreasonable expectation. The other side of it, too, is we're supposed to be the heroes. And I use that term very loosely because I have never, ever considered myself a hero. Not once. Heroes are people who do things that they're not expected to, that they're not paid to do, that they're not trained to do. For example, a hero is a neighbor who walks up and lifts the car off of his neighbor who was working on the car and the car fell off the jacks. And that's been documented a number of times where people have had that superhuman strength in a moment of crisis. That's a hero. A person who puts themselves at risk, who is not has not signed up, who's not sworn an oath to take those risks. Police officers swear that oath. Firefighters swear that oath. Dispatchers swear a different oath, but it's the same. The first responders, as we like to refer to them, they have risk as well. They have to take home everything they hear and never see. And that's so much more than many of us can contemplate. It's so much more to hear, sit and listen and try and guide people through horrific instances without being able to do anything other than use your voice and use your words to try and help calm the situation, make the situation better. Think of being on the other end of a phone when a woman is hiding in a closet, scared to death that her boyfriend, who's high on who knows what, is going to beat the ever-living hell out of her and maybe even kill her. Think about that. And you're expected to take that home? Think about trying to talk a 70-year-old woman into doing CPR on her husband, who she found in the car, in the garage, running, because he had just been diagnosed terminally ill with cancer or whatever. Think about that. Dispatchers are absolutely the unsung heroes, and I call them heroes because they didn't necessarily sign up for some of the stuff they see and hear. And frankly, firefighters and police officers didn't either, especially in today's day and age. But we knew to an extent what we were getting into, but at some level we don't. I've seen things and heard things and smelled things that I don't think our brains are designed to deal with, not effectively at least. And then we get into the whole idea of the mental health or lack thereof for fire and EMS, and that's part of what some of my goals are and what some of the processes that I've put in place are trying to do, a grassroots movement to be able to provide that support and provide an avenue for police and fire and dispatchers and EMS to get together. And I realize I didn't speak too much to EMS, but they're the ones who are elbows deep in this stuff, almost literally at times. We all have different perspectives and we all have different crosses to bear, and we should be doing it together. We should be doing it together, not separate, not fire and police fighting or arguing, EMS versus fire. My God, you guys, we're in this together. It doesn't matter what uniform we wear. It doesn't matter what badge we wear. It doesn't matter who we sign up with. It doesn't matter what our pay status is. The volunteers have even less access to some of these mental health resources and resources in general. There are fire districts around here that are doing so much more with so much less, and they do it and they get the job done. It may not be the same way as a nice municipal fire department, but they have separate and distinct challenges. They have, staffing challenges, but they're still doing it. They're still neighbors taking care of neighbors, and there's nothing that can beat that. No paycheck in the world, no fancy trucks in the world, no beautiful ambulance or decked out law enforcement vehicle can ever supersede neighbors helping neighbors.
It's 5 a.m. in Mexico. Morning's coming into view. I had to get away to see. Let the light break through.
A crystal. Another Emily Shirley track. That one's called 5 a.m. off her Courage Up album. So we finished up talking about neighbors helping neighbors. One of the things that dawns on me is, as we talk about that, is the community has an unreasonable expectation of first responders. I believe I said that earlier. They don't understand exactly what we go through, and that goes back to my previous episode, which talked about perspective. And I don't think the public will ever really understand what we do until they live a day in our shoes or walk a mile in our day or however you want to refer to it. Neither of those descriptions are right, but I'm not going to go back, so that's where we're at with it. They do citizen police academies. They do citizen fire academies, taking people through the roles of, what we do on a daily basis. But that doesn't cut it. They never see the years and years of exposure to things that, as I said before, we aren't designed, our brains aren't designed to see or handle. And so I think back over my time as a firefighter and the things that the public did for us. Very heartfelt, wonderful things. A lot of times it was buying coffee or bringing food to the firehouse or some other way to thank you for our service. And it's much like the way I feel when I run across a service member or a veteran. You want to do something, but you're not sure what. And for me, I think one of the best things that we could do from this point forward is to communicate to the public the importance of helping the helpers, right? Suicide rates are way, way up in all fields, including the military. That's not okay. They're looking at funding programs to reduce the suicides in our military and our veterans, which is amazing, and I applaud. All politics aside, that doesn't matter to me. It's that people are going to be getting the help that they need through further funding of programs like that. But that's what the public needs to hear and know, which is we need help. And I don't mean that all of us need to go see a shrink or need to see a psychiatrist or be medicated. Some of us do, and that's okay. But a lot of times, it's just making sure that we have the access to the resources we need when we need them without any interference from supervisors, from companies, from leadership, from boards of directors, from middle management, that we can go get the help we need when we need it with no repercussions, no retaliation, no fear of losing our jobs, no fear of getting fired, no fear of ridicule from our coworkers or our bosses or our leaders. That's what we need. And the way that's going to come about is on two fronts. The first front is right here. The first front is people like us, like you and me, speaking out, saying, you know what, I'm struggling with X, Y, and Z. I don't know how to deal with it. I need help. And I will tell you, that was one of the hardest things I have ever done in my entire life, was to admit to somebody else that I needed help. And subsequently, I've had to do it a number of times on a number of different fronts. But once I was able to admit that the first time, life got better. It got better little by little, but it got better. I was no longer having to hide in the shadows. And I think that's what we do, isn't it? Isn't that what we do? When was the last time that you talked to a coworker about your feelings? When was the last time that you said to one of your buddies, hey man, that call really jacked me up. I can't sleep. I can't eat. I had a buddy the other day messaged me and he said, man, I'm starting these new meds. Have you ever been on them? And I can't remember if they were for depression or exactly what they were for, but he was looking for some feedback from me. And this is a guy that would never, 15 years ago when we were working together, never would have said anything like that. And I applaud his efforts. He wants to know, have you ever been on these meds? Do they work for you? What are the side effects? Right? He reached out, which is awesome, because he realized that he was super happy at work. Everything was going really well. And then he came home to his wife and his beautiful boys, and he was a colossal dick. He was taking out his work stress on his family. And I don't know anybody who's ever been a first responder who hasn't done that to a certain degree, bringing work home. And as much as we want to compartmentalize and say, I'm going to leave work at work and I'm going to leave home at home, bullshit. It doesn't happen that way. It just doesn't. And so for me, yes, there's a whole host of treatment options. For me, what I've found is that talking about those things which make me angry, make me scared, make me hurt, make me sad, talking about those things helps. That's for me. And I realize I'm dabbling into the touchy-feely, you know, ethereal world. And yes, I worked in Boulder, Colorado for a while, but I worked in Boulder County. I worked for the city too, but I lived in Boulder County, so it's different. We're not talking about that touchy-feely kind of stuff, you guys. We're not talking about rainbows blowing out a unicorn's asses. That's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about puppy dogs. We're talking about taking care of ourselves. And let me ask you this. What fire department, what fire crew, what police department, and EMS to a lesser extent, requires you to do physical training every single day? The majority of them, right? Every single day. And that's true for the majority of fire and police and, you know, not so much EMS. But physical training is a major component of most fire departments that I know. At the very least, you have to pass a physical test to get in the door. And at the very least, if you're a wildland firefighter, you have to pass the PAC test every year, which is a physical test. But what about mental training? What about emotional fitness? What about mental toughness? When was the last time you did MT as opposed to PT? Yeah, that's what I thought. Because we don't talk about it. We're starting to. We're starting to, which is a good step in the right direction. But up until now, nobody's even thought about it. And these situations that we're faced with, how does your brain handle dealing, seeing a dead baby dead at the hands of its own mother? How do you deal with seeing a family who lost everything in their RV fire? They were living in the RV and it's gone. And that's everything they owned except the clothes on their back, and sometimes not even that. How do you deal with going to the same house over and over and over again on domestic violence calls and not being able to do anything because when the cops show up, nobody wants to press charges? How do you deal with seeing a family of four killed from a drunk driver and the drunk driver gets to walk away? How do you handle that?
Dry out from the dusty mountainside. Made it through in record time. Found Lincoln on the other side.
So here's where we're left. We're left with a community, a public that doesn't understand entirely what we do and don't understand the kind of help that we might need. And don't get me wrong, I love cookies and I love cake and I love having kids wave with all of their fingers at me instead of just one if I were in law enforcement. But the beauty is that they do respect us and appreciate us. In fact, I was working on 9/11 and I'd gotten into the firehouse about an hour early, get ready to go for the day, and then the plane hit the first tower and we were glued to the TV, and minutes after the second tower got hit, it dawned on me that my mom was in New York City, and panic does not begin to explain the emotions I was feeling. I ran to the phone and called her and called her and called her and called her, and all the phone lines were down and I didn't hear from her for what seemed like hours. I don't even know what the actual time frame was. The chief then came in and kicked us out, turned the TV off, said, "You guys need to get out of here and go do something." As the lieutenant at the time, I said, "Chief, what do you want us to go do?" And he looked at me dead in the eyes and he said, "I don't care. Just get out of here and stop watching TV. Stop listening to the radio. Just get out." And I didn't quite understand at the time, but I do now. And so we went to the grocery store. We were picking items up for breakfast. And I was going over and I picked up a dozen eggs. And I opened up the package to check the eggs to make sure they weren't cracked. And this woman came over to me. She looked me in the eyes, didn't say a word, outstretched her arms in a hug, and gave me a big, huge bear hug, as much as a 72-year-old woman could give me a big bear hug. But she was giving it everything she had. And when that embrace was done, she turned and she walked away, having never said one word. That happened 18 years ago, and I still remember it so clearly, because she got it. She understood that what happened in New York that day didn't just happen in New York. She understood the brotherhood. She understood the idea, as cliche as it is, you go, we go. And you see that to this day in the fire service. You see it also in EMS and in law enforcement and in dispatch. You feel the pain of the loss of brothers and sisters. But on the other side, You feel the joys. We share in the joys that the family, that the brotherhood and the sisterhood relish in. The births. I saw a great picture the other day. There were 8 firefighters who were all holding their kiddos, and all of them were between the ages of brand newborn and 1 year old, and they were all in the same fire department. It makes you wonder what was going on, a blizzard or I don't know. But anyway, really, really cool to see all of these little kiddos all born within the same, 365 days of each other to 8 guys who were on the department. Obviously a very big department, but how freaking cool is that? You know, we share the highs and we share the lows. You know, the brotherhood is a deal where a guy on his day off calls and says, "Hey man, I just got a call from my mom. She needs to move a mattress into her house. Are you available?" "Hell yeah, I'm available." "Hey man, I know you got a chainsaw. Can you come over and help me do X, Y, and Z at the house? I got this tree that I got." "Hell yeah." "Hey, you know, my car's busted. My wife's car went out. I don't know what's going on with it. You're a good mechanic. Will you come over?" "Hell yeah." And if that guy can't, this gal will. Or if that gal's not available, somebody else will step in. All you have to do is ask. And that's the hard part. The hard part is asking, because that means that you need help. And we help people. We don't need help. At least that's the mentality that I had for far too long. So I think I'll leave you with this for today. If you are in need, reach out. And I'm not talking about massive mental health issues. I'm talking if you need help moving something, call one of your brothers or sisters and have them come help you. Yeah, we've all lifted that stupidly heavy, ridiculous thing into the back of our pickup truck or into the grocery getter or up the stairs. But what happens when you throw your back out and you're on light duty from work? Or worse, you blow your shoulder out and you're out of a job. It's not that hard to ask for help. And people, more often than not, are much more inclined to help you. And then guess what happens? When they need help, guess what they're going to do? They're going to think about you calling them and they're going to call you. And it's a give and take, it's a back and forth, and that's exactly what a family should be. And that is what the brotherhood and sisterhood of first responders are. We're not always available for each other, but we're always there for each other. Hell, let me put it to you this way, in the final thought. Currently, I'm not working in the fire service. I'm not working as a first responder. I identify with the family and the brotherhood so much that I continue to refer to we. And I don't know if that will ever, until the day that I die, will ever change. Thanks for sharing your time with me. We'll see you on the next episode.
Baby, let's go below the surface, see what we can find. There's no reason to be nervous, this happens all the time. Well, I don't wanna go up to the mountains, and I don't need to go down to the sea. I wanna sit right here till we unravel mystery. Yeah, well, the lights of the city are shining below. Wanna hold on to you, girl, and never let go. And while everyone else is just walking, don't want to wait until tomorrow, cause the fortune said that the time is now. It's time to find out what we're doing here anyhow. let's go out in the moonlight and walk for a while. Maybe stay up all night and we can talk for a while. I said, kick off your shoes. You got nothing in the world to lose but your sleep. Yeah, baby, let's dig down deep. Could you dig down deep? I wanna dig down. This is an open invitation.